Welcome to the Owner to Owner podcast with your host, Jesse Tyler, part of the EO Podcast Network.
Welcome to Owner podcast. This is Jesse Tyler, your host. I do this podcast for the EO Podcast Network for Brett Kiesling. He's been an advocate of employee ownership for years and has recorded hundreds of episodes across the stratosphere of the employee ownership world. Brett was looking for an employee owner to interview other employee owners. And I raised my hand on LinkedIn and we'd met at a conference, had a friendship and a rapport, and it just took off from there. So in season three now of the Owner to Owner, the goal of the podcast is to amplify the voices of the daily workers and hear their wisdom, really. Just there's incredible eloquence and insight, but you just have to stop and ask people about it. So this is really an informal conversation. We have Mike, Anna, and David from King Arthur Baking Company. I'm going to have them introduce themselves in a second. I just wanted to sort of set the tone, and we will say a couple things is I do have some bias and brand loyalty. We are 100% King Arthur family and have been for years. There's King Arthur products to bake with and feed your family, and then there are other things in the shelves around them. So I will acknowledge that. I will also pair that with we're a Bob's Red Mill family and some of the others. So I usually end the podcast by saying, you know, let's buy employee-owned, work employee-owned, and eat employee-owned. But I needed to sort of let folks know that if you're not buying King Arthur baking products and having a customer interaction with them, that you are absolutely missing out. So what I'd like to do is start with Mike, kind of who you are, what you do, and a little bit about King Arthur baking. And then we'll go to Anna and Dave and start talking ownership, if that's cool. Mike?
Yeah, thanks so much, Jesse. So excited to be here. Glad to hear you've had, you know, good experience with our products. I can honestly say I've never had the chance to be a personal consumer of Hypertherm's products, but if I ever were in that position, I would certainly go in that direction. But my name is Mike Scanlon. I am on the HR team here at King Arthur Baking Company. I'm our manager of workforce acquisition and growth. I lead all things hiring and recruiting, onboarding, offboarding, employee growth and development, and workforce planning. So kind of a lot of different things across the employee life cycle from the start of their journey with King Arthur to the end of their journey and everything in between. I've been here about 2.5 years at this point. That makes me, with our vesting, I guess 20% vested, coming up on 40% as we, you know, actually maybe 40% now or next month, I'll hit my 800 hours for the year, which is our threshold. So coming up, I guess, on 40% vested here pretty soon, and just excited to talk ownership today.
That's great. And for listeners, Mike and I worked with Christy Kane from Gardeners at the last Vermont Employee Ownership Conference, talking about some of the topics around Mike's work and the other work that they do. Having fun today, just meeting Anna and David. So Anna, who are you and what do you do for King Arthur Baking?
Well, hello, and thank you for inviting us. Really, really excited to talk today. My name is Anna Gallo. I am the Fulfillment Operations Manager. So I oversee our direct-to-consumer distribution centers. I've been with King Arthur for just 4 years, a couple of weeks ago. And it's been a really, really exciting and a lot of learning opportunity. I'm really excited to be here.
That's great. That's great. David, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, my name is David Turner. I'm a recipe developer here at King Arthur. But that means that I develop and test original and contributor recipe content for our website, catalog, and book publications. And I'm coming up on 1 year in that role, but I spent 2.5 years prior to that here at King Arthur as a baker support specialist in our customer service department, answering calls from bakers and other customers who had questions or concerns about products or recipes that we put out there for the customers to consume. And King Arthur is my first employee ownership experience.
Nice. So you're a food scientist who makes and saves holidays for entire families, is what I was hearing, if I did a subtitle on that.
Yeah, scientist is a generous term. I would say the R&D side of our kitchen is more the scientist. I'm more of the content creator, but there is definitely overlap in our work, and there's certainly science involved in my work as well. And as far as, you know, making or breaking someone's holiday, there's definitely times on the hotline, the baker's hotline, where I was accused or rewarded for having made or broken someone's holiday.
That's great. So, for That's sure. great. And then Anna, make sure everything is there when it's supposed to be or slightly early. and yes. Mike helps the people flow. That's great. All right, for listeners, this is the disclaimer on sound quality. So we have folks working at a factory. I'm recording in the afternoon on a rare remote day, and I have two cattle dogs that seem to be barking now and then. So if you hear some other sounds and the quality isn't too sharp, then we hope that adds to the authenticity of your listening experience. All right, so I'd like to jump right in with a couple questions that I like to start every episode, and they're really intentional, trying to basically have you teach, but you know, share your experience. So when people are new to ownership, companies are new to ownership, new hires are new to ownership, can take them a while to kind of get their hands around it. So for context, I do a lot of the orientation for Hypotherm, and we can hire 150 to 200 people a year. So I have a lot of awareness of what it can take. And I just told 10 new hires the other day that in my opinion, if they're open to it, it takes 3 to 5 years to really get your hands around this whole ownership thing. So don't rush yourselves. So what I'd love to do is just have the three of you, starting with Mike. How do you talk about ownership when you're out in the world, not around employee owners? We'll get there to new hires in the third question, but how do you talk about it? You're wearing your King Arthur gear. Everybody in Vermont, New Hampshire knows that King Arthur is a leading employee-owned company. If they ask you about it, like, Mike, what do you say? What do you start with?
Yeah, it's such a good question, a good topic, because King Arthur is the first place I've ever worked where I do get that sort of reaction. When you wear your King Arthur hat or shirt or sweatshirt or whatever it is, people get excited, whether it be a connection to the product, whether it be a connection to something King Arthur does for the community, or in many cases, a connection to what is this thing that's employee ownership. And I often break it down into two. It's such an oversimplification, but I break it down into two main areas. You have the very literal, what does it mean for your pocketbook, for lack of a better term? And then you have the, what does it mean for the culture of the company on a day-to-day basis? And, you know, then there's the whole side, the literal side, which is the employee stock ownership plan here at King Arthur, and your contributions you get every year once you enter the plan and all the vesting. And there is all of that. But I think where it really makes the most difference to me on a day-to-day basis is really on that cultural side, what it means to be an employee owner. And to me, it means a level of compassion, of connection to your fellow employees that I've never experienced at other, you know, other types of companies. Everybody has that same drive for the success of the company, not just tomorrow, not just next week, not just next year, but 10 years, 20 years beyond. We all want that same thing. And it makes it so easy for people and everybody to just collaborate, to be on the same page. Even if you disagree on something, you still are all striving for that same end result, which is just such a powerful sort of mentality to bring into work every day. Mm-hmm. It makes it easy for me to get excited about anything I'm facing at work. It's easy to get excited. It's easy to feel good about it.
That's great. Thanks for that. Anna, what are your thoughts? You're out in the world. You're somewhere in the Upper Valley, or you're on a vacation far from the Upper Valley, and somebody sees your 100% employee-owned garb. How do you talk to them about employee ownership if they're curious?
To me, it really has to do with the amount of care that goes into a day-to-day works that we do. So one of the things that I'm very lucky to have is that I have a really large team, or get to work with very large teams that fluctuate throughout the season, especially throughout the year. And when we get to peak season, we get a lot of seasonals. To see how those are working on a day-to-day, like the amount of care that everybody puts into making sure your order is taken care of the best possible way so it arrives to your house, is like nothing I've ever seen before, ever. Mm. Like there's so much care, because we all know that it's going to come back to us, because we're all proud of what it is that we're doing. And then when it comes to working with seasonals, we really care to make sure that they understand how important it is for us. So it is not only, let's say, the leads that are training, it's everybody as a group that is making sure that seasonal succeeds, to make sure that the product, when it gets to a customer, is the best possible way.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it's great to talk about seasonals, you know, seasonal workers, where I think of King Arthur and Gardner Supply Company as having to ramp up for different mm-hmm. seasons. But and then what is it like to be a seasonal worker at an employee-owned company? That could be its own mini series if we could have people, because it's very interesting having met and talked to some yes. of them about it. Just feels better to work here. People answer my questions, my voice matters, they're curious about my ideas, and they're not participants in the ESOP, and they're not long term. So I'm glad that you brought that up. Thank you for that. David, following Mike and Anna, what are your thoughts? You're out in the world. How do you talk about employee ownership to somebody who's not familiar with it or is EO curious?
Yeah, I think, you know, like Mike said, it's a complicated process if you break it down into many pieces. But the way to simplify it for folks is to say it, that the company's growth is based on every employee's individual success. And so, or you could say our collective success is based on our individual success. And so for me, that brings an element of security that I haven't experienced with other employers that I've had. And it's not just my own personal security, but it's Anna's security, it's Mike's security, and the security of the other folks that will come along behind us.
That's great. That's great. It's always interesting to hear the answers because they're never, I've asked a lot of people this question and they're never quite the same reply. I was talking to a new ESOP, somebody from a new ESOP reached out for, hey, you know, culture stuff, you know, what do you think? And I said, well, if it helps the way I talk about it with our new hires, maybe you can borrow some of it, make it your own, and then come back and teach us a better way to do that. But, you know, let's just get it right out of the way. We work for pay and benefits. And if you work at an ESOP, it is, we're all geared together to try to extend our job security, our wealth building potential. And even though an ESOP's a retirement plan, you can look at it. If you start at 20 and you look at it at 25, you'll be worth more money than if you weren't at an ESOP. So if you're 22 and you're hearing retirement plan, it's wealth building. It's wealth building, but then back it up a little bit. What's the job quality? And a really basic thing is, do you like the people you work with? Do you believe in the company values and mission? The founding values and mission of a company decide whether it's a successful ESOP. Ownership and a retirement plan can't fix something that isn't there or build it that isn't there. But the day-to-day, we build together on a culture experience. So it was a lot of fun to kind of have that banter. I just had that conversation the other day and it felt new again after talking to thousands of people about ownership. So it's neat to hear some of those themes, and I can borrow a few from what you just shared. So Anna, maybe you could start with this question. How do you describe the experience of employee ownership to your friends and family? So they know you having not worked at an ESOP. They now know you there. Do they see a difference? You know, like, what do you end up talking about that might be different than somebody at the grocery store in question one?
So I do come, the job that I was prior to this, it was not an ESOP, but it was a co-op, meaning everybody was working together towards the same goal. And I love that. And I really, really love that. But I wanted something that was a little bit more corporate, like a business. So finding King Arthur was like a perfect match because I get to really, really work hard to make a company successful while at the same time working with people that I deeply respect, that I can see myself retiring from this company, and that everybody around me is working towards the same goal. So I try to explain that to my friends. And it's always hard, like, one, that you kind of really like your job, that you're working with people that you really like, and that you kind of said that, yeah, this may be the place that I'm going to be for the rest of my life. So yeah, that's usually how it goes.
Yeah, that's great, because it's an interesting subset of an experience where a lot of people, you know, after they started a healthy ESOP, successful ESOP, you know, their friends and their family, if you talk to them about it, they find they observe a difference in behavior and outlook and experience. And so it's very interesting to hear a little bit about that. I didn't realize you had worked at a co-op before. So you already had a little bit of an insight into the, you know, sort of worker equity and,
yes,
and empowerment. That's great that you're happy with King Arthur. David, what about for you? Friends and family, how do you talk about ownership?
Yeah, I think the retirement piece is the one that resonates mostly when I talk with friends and family, because for whatever reason, you know, there are multiple retirees in my friends and family orbit. So when they find out that I'm working for an ESOP, they are like, oh yeah, wow. They just get really excited that I have that separate retirement stream happening for me along the way. And it's obviously very exciting for me as well. So, you know, and Mike talked about the pocketbook aspects of the ESOP earlier. And I think that's part of how I distill it down for folks a lot of the time, friends and family, because they are really mostly just concerned with my success and making sure that I'm setting myself about well for retirement. So yeah, I focus on those pieces when it comes to that group.
That's great. It was very different to work your career knowing that you were doing the right things and working for a company that's also investing in your retirement. So, you know, the whether you have enough or not gets, you know, potentially more intense as people are, like what I see at our company, people are a little bit more, you know, 50s, maybe they're getting a little bit more later 50s, far more focused on, you know, how am I doing? How's my pacing? Did I use the company, you know, estimate calculator for what it have? Do I work with the financial group or whatever? But it's just different if you know that you're doing the right thing and your company has got your back. So it's a,
for sure,
you know, a common thing in ownership is, you know, how do you talk to brand new employees about what's really a retirement plan? And so I think a little bit of what you were sharing is sort of, I mean, your friends and family, you could, people could borrow that to kind of talk across different career tenures and ages. Mike, I'm going to shift the question just a little bit. I'm going to move you on to coworkers, being that we have the talent acquisition guru in the house for this question. How do you, I'm going to add another layer I don't usually add. So how do you help new coworkers understand ownership? And if you're willing, how do you like, what do you say to coach, you know, hiring leaders and teams, you know, to help the new King Arthur Baking associate come into the ownership, understanding it, really getting their hands around it. So how do you help a new coworker? They just fell out of the sky. It doesn't matter on age, but I think sometimes it can actually be insightful to see what comes to mind.
Yeah. I mean, looking back to something you mentioned earlier, Jesse, the first thing I always say is it's a process. It can't and won't happen overnight. It's not one conversation. It's not two conversations, and it's probably not even five. So it's going to be a process. You know, our goal is to begin that process from the first conversation, the first interview. So within my first, you know, my or someone on my team's first phone screen with a candidate, we are talking ownership. The really cool thing is, in many cases, the candidate's the one who brings that up. Not always, but usually that is the case. And we get the chance to really kind of, you know, take an already exciting topic to them and make it even more exciting. In other cases, it is presenting something new, and that's okay too. So that's where it starts. It's going to continue through the interview process. You know, I think the idea of ownership is something that is present in our interview process, you know, and for better or worse, I've noticed in my time at King Arthur, we can sometimes have longer interview processes. And I think that really does come back to ownership. It's because so many different roles are so closely involved in different areas. There's always that opportunity to meet a lot of different people in the process because they will be interacting so closely with so many different people. So that feeds into the interview process. And then once they get here, of course, that process continues. You know, from day one, we're going to talk to them at a very, very high level. I'm a big proponent of day one. You're not retaining anything, by the way. So we kind of lay some foundation. But day one at a new job is a big day, right? You're not going to retain a whole lot. So we're going to start to lay the foundation. We're going to carry that through till we do on-site orientations. That's where we're going to start to really dive deeper into the cultural and financial. And then, as you mentioned, there's, of course, a very high role with the manager into all this. You know, the manager is going to continue that journey far beyond anything I do from my side on the HR side. The manager is going to really be that advocate for what ownership means on a day-to-day basis, because they're the ones working with the new employee on a day-to-day basis.
That's great. Anna, what are your thoughts on this?
So I can talk from my experience when I was hired to work here. I applied. This was not the first position that I applied. I applied to very many different positions. And if it was not because of the care and attention that HR put through all the interviews process and even to let me know that I did not get a job, I would not have come back. I probably would have given up after the first or second job. There was so much care. And I know I mentioned care before, but there was just so much care and thoughtfulness onto every single conversation with HR that I was already like, I really need to figure out a way to work for this company. And then from the first day that you walk into campus, again, it's so much care and attention, and it makes you feel like you're really part of something that has a purpose.
That's great. That's great. And yeah.
If I could, Jesse, it's so funny you mentioned that. I didn't realize you had gone for other roles at King Arthur because I have the exact same story. A year before I landed the job at King Arthur, I had interviewed for and didn't get the job, and the same experience. It was such an incredible experience from everybody in HR, everyone I met. It was kind of a no-brainer when the role came back open that, yes, I would love to try and go for that again. And here we are. So there's something there, that repeat interest in getting into King Arthur.
Yeah, I've heard other ESOPs say that new hires, we've experienced it where they say, okay, everyone seems so nice. What's the catch? Well, they'll say it smiling, but you know, there's truth in humor. So if somebody's joking around, there's truth in what they're saying, and you can read it on their face. Like, everyone seems so nice. You know, what's the catch? David, what do you think about that? Do you think of some recent new hires you might have interacted with?
Well, it is funny because there is a bit of a is too good to be true quality about it. And I think that's what people are describing when they think there's a catch. But I think what the catch is or what people are observing is the culture aspect of an ESOP. And it's funny because ES and O and P, none of that stands for culture. And there's nothing about culture that inherently necessarily has to be a part of that per se. But, you know, when you hear or you talk to other ESOP or employee owners at other companies, that sort of thing, you do find out that this is a consistent thread among ESOPs, is that the culture is the catch. It's the thing that you want to keep applying for, the thing you want to stay for, and the thing that makes it hard to leave if ever you're in that position. So I think that's the catch.
Yeah. And what I hear from all of you is the sense of belonging. There's different, you know, elements to an, mm-hmm. you know, an employee experience. And yeah. It's amazing if you can believe in the mission and you can believe in the product, but if you feel connected with the coworkers, you're going to spend all day doing something, it makes quite a difference. And what's really interesting with ESOPs, so if it helps you at all, on the first day, I said this to the 10 I mentioned that we just brought on, I was like, listen, this is a great place to work, but it doesn't mean it's an easy place to work. If you wanted your voice to matter, you wanted your ideas to count, you're going to have to get used to somebody saying, why didn't you put that idea in the continuous improvement database? Three other teams mm-hmm. might benefit. What is going on? Why didn't you put that in? And that's sort of a flip from people are used to. And you know, I mentioned this often on the episodes, but I mentioned it on day one as well, is, you know, people leaving other companies usually aren't pretty thrilled about their experience at that company. And so it can take them a while to kind of get their sea legs and trust. And so I think Anna, you brought that up first, you know, just you kept mentioning mm-hmm. trust. And a lot of ESOPs, when you talk to more and more people, they run their companies on trust and care and values and mission. But the trust usually comes out first, which is really cool. It's fun to hear the nuances and differences of employee-owned companies, but it's wonderful to hear the themes as we go through. So I want to ask all three of you the big question. Anna, if you want to start us off, and then we'll go to Mike and David. What does ownership mean to you?
It's a huge reason why I'm here. It means commitment to what I'm doing, like my regular day-to-day job, like my task, but it also means commitment to my co-workers and everybody that is around me, because we're all going to be part of the success of the company, which in return comes back to us.
Nice. Nice. Mike, what does ownership mean to you?
Yeah, really probably very similar, but it's kind of like purpose and greater meaning to what I do. You know, I everything I do, there's that added lens of what it's going to mean for the organization. And it's not just about collecting a paycheck, because there's more to it than that. You know, it is about the betterment of an organization that in turn is bettering so many lives of our employees' families, and so on, that it is just a lot of power there.
Thank you. David, what does ownership mean to you?
Yeah, I would echo what Anna and Mike have said about the personal interest and seeing that my work not only impacts me, but everyone else around me. And to that end, and to build a bit off of what Anna was talking about earlier, as a recipe developer personally, like I'm thinking through how the person reading that recipe is going to experience it, how successful they are going to be when making it, which is going to impact their willingness to buy our product, which has everything to do with how we make money in our bottom line. So everything is interconnected. And I think it's easier to see that when you have an ownership stake in the business.
Very nice. Very nice. So I want to ask each of you a slightly different version of the same question. So let's go back to Anna. What is the best part of your ownership experience? And then I'm going to go to Mike for, maybe I'll go back to David for the easiest, and then I'll throw Mike the hardest one, because we presented together and I know he won't blink, and I want to be fair to David and Anna. What is the most challenging? What's the hard part? It's great that we like each other. It's great that we're wealth building, but what's the hard part? So you want to start us off?
Sure. I think the transparency is great. I think that is probably for me is the best part, because you're not just seeing what is in front of you, you're seeing the whole company. And as a company, we are incredibly transparent. We have our town hall meetings. We get to talk about every single detail that is going on. We're pretty open book. And I think that is fantastic. Like, I can see exactly where the road is and what is happening.
That's great. That's great. David, I'll give you what's the easiest part of the element, or the easiest, what comes to mind is sort of like, it's just so much easier to work this way in an employee-owned company. Does something come to mind for you as like your go-to when you talk about the work experience at your employee-owned company?
Well, I guess the easiest part of the ESOP is that I don't have to do anything. I'm already a part of it when I join the company, as Mike would explain on day one. So that's easy. I hate to use the word matriarchal because I think there are undertones and overtones that come with that that are bad and or bring up patriarchal as a term, okay, as sort of the foil. I feel like there's a matriarchal component to our company, and that's a particular environment that I know that I work well in. And so for me, I would say that's, I guess, the easiest thing for me is like I fit very well into that quote unquote matriarchal environment. And I guess if you want to build out what does matriarchal mean, it for me, it's about just sort of the caring, the willingness to nurture, the care to make sure people actually understand and have buy-in. And I vibe with all of that.
That's great. It's amazing how much more work you can get done if that's the sense that you have and that's what your work experience is. Right. All right, Mike, I'm going to flip the coin a little, make you work a little bit potentially here. What's the most challenging element of ownership? What comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I think to me, it's we've talked a lot about what ownership is. It's kind of the flip of that coin, what ownership isn't. And what I mean by that is the concept that not everything is going to go exactly the way I or any other employee is going to want it to go, from business decisions to any sort of decision or process that's put in place. And understanding that, you know, to me, that is ownership, understanding why something, maybe this isn't my personal belief or my personal preference of how this goes, but I understand why as an owner, this has to be this way because it's for the betterment of the company overall, or it is the right decision. And of course, you know, understanding that your voice is always heard, but at the end of the day too, business decisions do have to be made. And there's no scenario where everybody gets everything they want in every decision, right? We all know that that's the reality of it, but that can sometimes be, I think, a challenging concept to wrap your head around as an owner. I am an owner, and yet it doesn't mean that everything I want every single day is gonna go that way. So it's a hard balance to strike. I think once you can find it, that's kind of that journey maybe is understanding it's not gonna happen overnight and understanding that, but it can be a hard balance, and it can be hard for me and for, I think I would imagine anybody to really get your head around what that means.
Yeah, I appreciate you going there and tackling that one. It's interesting to see how people navigate kind of figuring out what's that limit. You know, you're 100% employee owned. It doesn't mean that somebody in one role gets to tell somebody in another role what to do or how to do it. It's good to ask questions, but it doesn't mean you need to be challenging each other all the time. People still need to get their work done, you know. So I find that nuance really interesting and how different companies tackle that. So I want to come around the horn and ask the same question for all three of you. Today, in this moment, in this conversation, if you had to boil it all down, like I know you sell maple syrup, so you start with 40 gallons of sap, get it down to a gallon of syrup. You start with our conversation, you boil it down, and you got a form, an old-fashioned form and a pen, and you had three slots you could fill in to describe employee ownership. Anna, what three words would you use today? You could reduce it to three words.
Trust, commitment, and responsibility.
Now that you did that perfectly, would you like to expand on any of those, or you could shake it off and just let them float out there?
So I'll start with commitment. Like, again, at the end of the day, you're not just working for yourself. It really has a whole company behind you that you're part of, and it really, really matters. So you really need to work hard. It's up to you to be successful. So you need that responsibility to work hard. Trust, you need to trust that the ones around you are also doing the same, and that they're doing what their job requires them to do, that they're the ones that know that, and they're the ones that will make those decisions when, like Mike was saying before, when I don't agree, I have to trust that that is the right decision. And I forgot what my other one was. Commitment and transparency.
Responsibility.
And responsibility. Yeah, like the responsibility and trust, just kind of the same thing, just making sure that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Nice. Thanks. David, three words for ownership.
One of my words is hyphenated. So four words for me. The first one is buy-in. Nice. That would be my hyphenated word, meaning that I have buy-in in what's taking place, and hopefully all those fellow EOs around me do as well. Vestedness comes up as a word for me, and that's not necessarily vested in the ESOP term it's used as much as invested, I suppose, in the success of the company. Like, I feel like we all have a vested interest in that, literally and figuratively. And then stakeholder is another word for me, in the sense that, again, if we all have the same buy-in, we're essentially all equal stakeholders in the success of the company. So three words for me: buy-in, vestedness, and stakeholder.
Nice. Thanks. Mike, for you?
Yeah. So my first word would be passion for your organization. You know, for us, we're a mission-driven organization as a benefit corporation. So passion, it comes hand in hand at King Arthur. Employee ownership comes with the values of a benefit corporation. So passion is number one. Number two for me is understanding. A lot of the same themes as I think what Anna and David are getting at, but understanding of taking the time to understand the business, to understand each other as fellow employee owners, to understand the decisions being made is really impactful. And then my last word, I'm probably going to break all the rules, but I'm going to say ownership. How can you not have ownership as one of your three words? So all the things we've already said, but you know, you are an owner of this company. You know, you are an employee owner. So that would be my third word.
That's great. Well, it comes out in the customer experience. You know, we have an intern program. So we're based, for listeners, we're based, you know, probably 20 minutes away from King Arthur Baking headquarters where Hypotherm Associates is, and our companies interact a lot. And we have an intern program that we've been growing and having a lot of fun with. And we took them out to volunteer with Willing Hands. We planted sweet potatoes as their team building experience. But then we had lunch at the King Arthur Baking Company Cafe to talk ownership. And it was just fun because you went in and I was asking them, like, what do you think? And they're like, this place is really cool. Like, think as a customer, it's super clean. Two people just said hi. And the food's really good. And it was just sort of fun to sort of convey that and then eat a really good meal at your place. So a couple more questions for you. I want to ask about your EO aha moment, if you've had one, and I'll explain that. And then I'd love to hear some insights from as many of you as want to share. It's like things about your ESOP culture, your ownership culture. Again, thinking of a new friend I just made at a brand new ESOP trying to make sense of this whole thing. We do this podcast in kind of service to them. We want your peers out in, you know, ESOP land, employee ownership world to hear their peers, hear their voices. Hey, that reminds me of somebody. You know, that's a sort of idea. So knowing that you have a lot of really cool activities, I wanted to give a little bit more time than I usually do for that second question. So let's go to the first one here. Mike, we'll start with you. We ask all our guests to share their EO aha moment. It's not the first time you heard about employee ownership or when you started to like it. It's that moment where you said, aha, this is going to be a game changer. Have you had an EO aha moment? And if so, could you share it?
Yeah, happy to. It's funny, when I got to King Arthur in my role, I was thrust very quickly into the role of selling it, right? As I was phone screening candidates, one of the first activities I started doing when I got here, suddenly I'm in a position of explaining and selling this idea that I most certainly at that point didn't fully understand. I certainly hadn't had my aha moment, you know, on my second week on the job. But for me, my aha moment probably came in one of the more challenging moments, which was going back a year and a half. Our VP of HR went out on leave. And so suddenly we were without, you know, I was without my personal leader in a position where I was suddenly reporting directly to, at the time, the co-CEOs of our company. And to me, the chance to connect with them on a weekly basis, observe their behaviors, that was my aha moment. And really seeing how willing and able they were to jump in and offer leadership to a new manager at the time was just, it was really cool. And it was really impressive that, you know, this is the top of the organization. And since then, you know, I started to see these themes that I now see throughout the entire organization in terms of styles and the passion and commitment that people have. But that was it for me. You know, and maybe it wasn't one single conversation, but it happened pretty quick. After a couple of those conversations, I realized, you know, wow, there's something to this. This isn't just a plan. This isn't just a retirement plan. There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, very cool. Thanks for sharing that. David, have you had an EO aha moment? If so, could you share it, please?
I don't know if I've had an aha moment, but as I think about this question, what comes up for me is whether it's sort of like Anna brought up earlier, this is like she could see herself retiring from this company. And I'm in this sort of position of questioning that for myself. Like, is this my retirement company? And if so, then what does that mean for me long term? And if it isn't, what it does mean for me is I will absolutely be looking for an employee owned company as my next opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that is not, I guess for me, that is a bit of an aha moment in the sense that I would not have considered that or known to consider that prior to coming here and working at an employee owned company. So whether it's staying long term or whether it's leaving at some point, employee ownership is an important model for me at this point that I want to retain.
That's great. And if it's affected how your outlook where you are or beyond with ownership needed to be part of the recipe baked in,
right.
Throwing that in there for you guys, then that's really cool. Anna, have you had an EO aha moment? And if so, could you share a little bit about it?
Absolutely. I think it was my first peak season here. I had just started. I started just before we got really, really busy. And all of a sudden, my team doubled in size just because of seasonals and everything going on. And the two things that stand out the most for me, one was to see people from other departments in the company come to the warehouse and work with us. And because we needed to make sure that these orders were coming out, which was huge to me. And then the second one was for my team to be like, no, we really need to get this order out. No matter what it takes, we're just going to stay here. We're going to work. We're going to make it happen. When in the past, I would have to beg people like, do you think you can stay an extra hour just to make this happen? That was not even a question. It was just happening. So to me, that was like, this is incredible. I can't believe this is happening.
That's great. That's great. I'm smiling because you reminded me of talking with the great marketing group, Butler Till. And one of the guests was talking about something they had to do last minute. And he's like, oh, I got to take care of this. And everybody stayed to help. And he's like, what is going on?
Yes.
Like everyone would run, but everyone's here. We got it done in like 20 minutes.
What's the catch?
Yeah. That's fantastic. I appreciate your sharing those. Again, just trying to help people kind of new to ownership, but also be renewed with ownership. You can get used to the way of working. And then 10, 15, 20 year tenure is not uncommon. It's much more common in any other form of ownership outside of any form of employee ownership. Workplace, I'm sorry, ownership is different. So part of it is also hoping that, you know, you can help rekindle, you know, if you share this with your teammates internally at King Arthur, that it can kind of remind people, you know, we're all busy and there's a lot of distractions. There's kind of I perceive a sense of tired and overwhelm with most humans in the world right now. And if you can help kind of reset that a little bit with the great shares that you've had, I think that's a neat part of it. So I want to hear a little bit about what's something that King Arthur Baking Company is great about with employee ownership. What's something you'd want to share with a bunch of listeners? What's something you're proud of? Mike, if you want to kick us off.
Yeah, I'll jump in. So I am really, really proud of King Arthur's commitment to the continued celebration of the last family owners of King Arthur. So Frank and Brenna Sands, they were the last family owners we're a very mature employee-owned company. So our employee-owned journey started in the mid-90s, concluded in the early 2000s when we became 100% employee-owned. So we're, you know, we're two decades into 100% employee ownership, which is crazy. And I was here for, you know, just such a small portion of that. And yet the legacy of Frank and Brenna Sands is not lost, and it's not lost on for new employees. You know, it's something that is harkened back to just so often. It's such a celebration when you really think about it, for anyone to sell their employee to their company, to their employees. It's such an incredible thing. And as long as I'm here, I'm going to certainly make sure that never goes away. Whether I've been employee-owned for 100 years, I want to still be celebrating Frank and Brenna Sands. You know, I've never personally had the chance to meet them, but so many around King Arthur have and do know them. It's such a powerful thing. And I'm really proud that King Arthur continues that legacy.
That's great. That's great. David, is there something around, you know, events, communication, any of that that comes to mind that you think your company does a really good job with that you could share out to plant some ideas, germinate some seeds out there?
Yeah. I would say that one of the things I've enjoyed since being here is seeing the way that our leadership is so approachable and so much, I guess, just like everyone else, if you will. I think because we are all employee owners, we all share a stake, even if your salary might be higher than mine or whatever the case may be, like we all still sort of have a similar buy-in. And that goes back to one of my words from earlier. I think because of that, like I know that when I see our CEO in the hallway, she knows my name. She says hello. She has an interest in what I'm doing. She asks me what I'm doing. There's a rapport, and it's not put on, and it's not fake, and it's genuine. And I think that's a not just a huge testament to her personally, but just to the way our company operates.
That's great. Thank you. And having a senior leader be present, let alone know your name, you know, be accessible, curious about you as a person. That's not something that enough people at work have experienced. I'm glad that's your experience and you shared it for our listeners. So thank you.
You bet.
Anna, what are your thoughts?
So we do do a lot of those celebrations, and most of them are usually in October, which I believe is the EO month. And it's incredible, like, how everybody in the company really wants to participate, regardless being our starting to get really, really busy time. Everybody tries to find time to spend time together. Like, there's so many different activities and so many things happening that everybody happens to gets a way to be involved, which I find really great. There's so many companies that you get to see other parts, especially when you're in a warehouse all day. So being able to see others, interact with others, celebrate what being an EO means, it's great.
That's great. I appreciate it. All right. So sort of our last stop, I'm going to start with you, Anna, then go to David. So we make Mike wait, because this is his favorite thing here with what he does for a living. You're encouraged to promote your company, why it's a great place to work there. It's getting harder and harder to hire. Our companies are in an area with some of the proportionately highest housing costs for workers in the country and some of the lowest unemployment. So our two companies need a lot of folks to come in to keep us chugging along. And, you know, what's really hard to conceive is we're not even at the hard part yet, as hard as it is now. So this is part of the podcast, and why I do it is that you can speak directly to people listening about why they should join you as co-workers, co-owners of King Arthur Baking. So, Anna, what would you say to folks that are listening that might be thinking about this King Arthur thing? What can you say to get them to pick up the phone, fill out an application? What would you want to tell them directly as a future peer?
And like, aside everything that we have mentioned about how wonderful it is to work in this company, I am very lucky that I have a position that I get to hire a lot of people to work alongside me. And that is a place that if you really want to work, this is the place to start. Like, I am at the warehouse, get every single background, can come in here and learn, and then grow with the company. Like, there really is opportunity to grow with the company and stay with the company, whether you're fresh out of high school or whether you're thinking of retirement, there is a place for you in the company. And there's a place that you're going to be appreciated and valued. There is a place that you're going to have that employee ownership there. You get to work with very, very competitive people. You get to learn. You get to be able to move to other positions if you feel like, oh, I don't know if this is what I want to do. There are so many opportunities. There are so many different things that you can do. It will be foolish to turn away if you're thinking, oh, this is just a warehouse position.
That's great. Thank you. And for listeners, just because this is just an audio and we don't use the video file from the conversation, when Anna was saying grow with the company, I think you said it twice, and Mike and David both nodded, kind of warm nods. So they seconded your motion. I think the motion carries. There's growth in that opportunity. So thanks, Anna. David, what do you want to say to potential future peers that might be thinking about your company?
I absolutely second the motion. I'm an example of someone who's been able to grow within the company, having started in a customer service position and then moved into a position that I'm in currently as a recipe developer. And so I think to piggyback off of what Anna was saying, the management here does take and show a vested interest in your growth, even if that means you leave their team and go to a different team, or you leave the company even. There is, in my personal experience anyway, a vested interest in that from the management and the leadership. And they put the time and money and energy behind that to make you successful because they understand that it helps everyone be successful. And it's not just lip service. Like, you hear this sort of language when you go to companies, I want to make you successful, or we're going to invest in your training. Well, I mean, when I've experienced that as lip service other places, but I've experienced it here as reality.
That's fantastic. Thanks. Mike, what do you want to say? This is your daily work. And I know, Anna, you do a lot of that. I should have given you louder props on the front end of this. But Mike, I know this is really, we talked a little bit about this before. So what do you want to say? This is, you know, in your own voice to people that might be considering King Arthur Baking Company.
Yeah, you know, King Arthur for me, and I'm talking my personal experience, it is the friendliest group of employees I've ever encountered. Mm. Top to bottom, across the board, every person I interact with ever at King Arthur is friendly and just a joy to interact with on a daily basis. Powerful. You know, I always feel a little silly saying that, in a way, that, you know, it's a friendly organization, but I'll be honest, I've worked places where that wasn't always the case. There were people where I would, you know, you'd cringe a little when you see that email come through or that phone call come through because you just didn't feel like it I don't have that at King Arthur. There's nobody that I would not be looking forward to connecting with and having a conversation with. And I would really just want to make sure that I encourage a willingness to just understand what King Arthur or any company, really any employee-owned company or any company, is all about. I say that from the standpoint of, you know, when I joined King Arthur, I didn't know what an employee-owned company was. I didn't know what a benefit corporation was. And I didn't know anything about baked goods other than eating them. And that's still pretty much the case. And that's okay. you know, I think, you know, anyone at King Arthur would be excited to have a conversation about, you know, what these things all mean. You know, one of the words I gave earlier was passion. I'm always scared to say that word because I don't want someone to interpret that as you have to be a passionate professional baker to work at King Arthur. You don't. Most certainly don't. When I say passion, I'm talking passion for what King Arthur stands for as a business, what we aim to do through baking, but just like in, you know, any company in our position. So reach out to me. I'll speak on behalf of Anna and David, probably reach out to any of us and any employee at King Arthur. Any of us would be so excited to have a conversation.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I'm smiling at the passion. It's like we have a strange culture where you're not supposed to give yourself credit. You're apparently not supposed to talk about what you're excited about or good at and those other things. But I think of, you know, sort of thought of a few coworkers that are really passionate, and they're some of the quietest people I know. Now at a sporting event and they're passionate, I don't recognize them. But yeah, from the work standpoint, I would think, you know, all three of your roles you can quietly be passionate, productive, and move your company forward. That's that amazing quality of working at an employee-owned company, is that you have almost a social ripcord. You have a safety valve where you can say, listen, we were here to move this company we own together forward. We need to settle this and move forward. Can we do that? And everyone will say, yes, thanks for refocusing us. Let's go. Well, I've really enjoyed the time with you. Again, I'm a very loyal, have been for decades, a very loyal, happy customer. Encourage others to go to the website for King Arthur Baking, call the Baker's Helpline, go to the stores, meet some of the owners. It's hard to, you can smell it right before the second door opens. You can smell the bread. It's just amazing. It's a really, really classy group, a values-based organization that does a lot in the community, is very generous to the community. So really appreciate the time with Anna, Dave, and Mike. And as I like to close, we do this for the EO Podcast Network, Amplifying Employee Ownership. We think that'll make a very significant difference in the future for the daily workers trying to move things forward. And please, if you can, buy employee-owned, bake employee-owned, eat employee-owned, and frequent employee-owned. So thanks to our listeners, and we'll catch you on the next episode. This is Jesse Tyler. Thank you.
We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook at EO Podcast Network and on Twitter at ESOP Podcast. This podcast has been produced by Brett Kiesling for the EO Podcast Network. Original music composed by Max Kiesling. Branding and marketing by Bitsy Plus Design. And I'm Bitsy McCann.